Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Greg Hart Show. I'm your host, Greg Hart, and we have a big news week for you this week. There's a lot of things going on. We're going to jump right into it. So first, Obamacare. Judge Reed O'Connor, who was appointed by George W. Bush, was hearing testimony about whether or not Obamacare was unconstitutional. Now, this is a huge win for Republicans because he ruled that Obamacare is now unconstitutional. A little bit of background about Obamacare. An essential component to Obamacare is something called the individual mandate. So basically what that says is that people have to buy Obamacare compliant health insurance. If you don't, then you're going to have to pay an additional tax. So Obamacare was passed in 2010. We're going to fast forward to 2012. There was a case brought to the Supreme Court where they were saying that they thought that Obamacare was unconstitutional. The Supreme Court ruled at that point that it was constitutional. Fast forward again to last year, 2017. The Republicans passed the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. Basically, one huge part of that tax cut was getting rid of the tax for not having health insurance. So we're going to jump right into the opinion written by Judge Reed O'Connor. I read this 55-page opinion so that you don't have to. And in here it says, the individual plaintiffs who are citizens and residents of the state of Texas challenge the individual mandate as unconstitutional requirement to purchase ACA compliant health insurance. ACA being Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. So basically what he's saying is that the citizens of Texas challenge that the individual mandate is an unconstitutional requirement. The Congress can't tell you that you have to purchase health insurance. Now, it goes on and says, basically in 2012, the Supreme Court held the individual mandate was unconstitutional under the Interstate Commerce Clause, which is Congress's right to regulate commerce. Now, it goes on to say it could fairly be read as an exercise of Congress's tax power because it triggered a tax. So to summarize that sentence, in layman's terms, what he's saying is that forcing people to buy health insurance is unconstitutional under their right to regulate commerce, to regulate business. They can't force people to buy it. But since they are imposing a tax on people for not having it, then it is constitutional. It goes under Congress's right to be able to pass taxes, thus making the whole individual mandate constitutional because of that tax. Now we're going to skip forward to Judge O'Connor's analysis. He says, in this case, the court finds the individual mandate can no longer be fairly read as an exercise of Congress's tax power and is still impermissible under the Interstate Commerce Clause, meaning the individual mandate is unconstitutional. He goes on to say the court finds that the individual mandate is essential and inseparable from the remainder of the ACA or the Affordable Care Act. So what he's saying here is that since they got rid of the tax, the ruling was that no longer it can be seen under the Congress's right to be able to pass taxes because there is no tax associated with it. Going on, since it's not permissible under the Interstate Commerce Clause, Congress's right to regulate business, that it's no longer in total constitutional for Congress to be able to tell you that you have to purchase health insurance. And he goes on to say that it is an essential part, that it's the key part to the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare and cannot be severed. So he goes on again and says, finally, Congress stated many times unequivocally through enacted text signed by President Obama that the individual mandate is essential to the Affordable Care Act. So in the Affordable Care Act itself that was written by Congress and signed by President Obama, it says that the individual mandate is the essential key to it. The Obamacare text makes clear means the mandate must work together with other provisions for the act to function as intended. Now, because of separation of power, the judge cannot rewrite the text of the Affordable Care Act, meaning that since it already says that the individual mandate is a key portion to the whole Obamacare working correctly, if the individual mandate is unconstitutional, that means that the whole Affordable Care Act is unconstitutional. Now, of course, this is going to be appealed by the Democrats. The Democrats in California have already said that they're going to appeal it, which is going to bring it to the Supreme Court with the newly appointed Justice Judge Kavanaugh. So there's going to be a big case in front of Kavanaugh pretty early in his career on the Supreme Court. And one thing I found a little funny was that Nancy Pelosi tweeted, quote, "Tonight's absurd ruling exposes the monstrous endgame of the GOP's all-out assault on people with pre-existing conditions and the ACA. When at-House Democrats take the gavel, the House will swiftly intervene in the appeals process to hashtag protect our care." I mean, it sounds like what she's trying to say is that when Democrats take power of the House of Representatives, they're going to try to intervene with the whole appeal going on in the Supreme Court of the Affordable Care Act. Now, thankfully for us, because of separation of power again, she's not going to have the ability to intervene at all. But it's just big talk for her to kind of rile up her base. Now, moving on, another thing that we're going to talk about, I don't know if you guys saw, there was a meeting between Donald Trump, Nancy Pelosi, and Chuck Schumer. They were talking about the border wall. They were talking about border security and getting funding for it. It started off just as any other meeting does. But one big thing was during this meeting, they had all of the press in there. They were recording. And this is something different than what we've typically seen. Normally, when we see that, it's at the very beginning of the meeting where they're just talking niceties to each other, complimenting each other, and then they go into a private actual meeting. This one took a little bit of a different turn. It kind of turned into a little bit of a shouting match, which, I mean, according to Nancy Pelosi, is kind of what she wanted. The day after the election this year, when Democrats took over the House of Representatives, she went on to talk about how she wants transparency in the government.
Producing to open the Congress with a rule that will insist upon openness and transparency.
And I mean, it sounds like that she's getting what she wants. She wanted to have openness. She wanted to have transparency so the American people could see what was going on. Nothing back door, nothing behind the curtain anymore. Have everything out in front of them. Now, in the meeting, this was an exchange between President Donald Trump and Nancy Pelosi, who it looks like is going to be the take over as Speaker of the House when Democrats do take control next year. So this is the exchange between Trump and Nancy Pelosi.
And we're entering into this kind of a discussion in the public view.
So she was basically saying, hey, we can't have this kind of discussion in the public view. And Donald Trump comes back and says, it's called transparency, Nancy. It's called transparency. Giving her a little bit of a taste of her own medicine. And I loved it. I watched every second of it. It was, if you guys didn't watch it, I insist that you guys should go on to YouTube. You can find it all over the place. Chuck Schumer looked like a kid who was sitting in the principal office. He had his elbows on his knees. He was had his head down, looking down. He wouldn't even make eye contact with the president. He looked defeated. It was just another example of Donald Trump kind of taking it to the Democrats. Now, make sure you guys stay tuned through this commercial break. We're going to talk a little bit more and dive into freedom of speech and the liberal assault on our freedom of speech.
However, I would love to be able to regulate the content of speech.
Hello, everybody. That was U.S. Representative Ted Lieu, the representative out of California's 33rd District. I'm talking about how he would be love to be able to regulate people's speech. And that brings us to this segment where we're going to talk a little bit more about free speech and the importance of it. So there's a lot of talk in America currently about regulating free speech and eliminating what they call hate speech. Now, there is no legal definition of hate speech, so it's kind of up to your own interpretation of what hate speech is. Not only is Representative Lieu the only one that wants this, this is something that's a common theme on the left and among leftists. So I'm going to talk a little bit about why we shouldn't regulate free speech, what it's going to lead to, and what it has already led to in other parts of the world. So one thing that really resonates with people is they don't want to hurt other people's feelings. They think if we can just make it illegal to be racist verbally, to be a bigoted verbally, that's just going to make the overall country a better place. We see this because with the leftists' love of Canada and their basically their whole social structure. There are a few countries who have already attempted this and are already attempting this, being Canada and the United Kingdom or England. And I'm going to dive into a few examples of how it has already led to a slippery slope and the fact that no matter what, it's inevitable that limiting someone's free speech is going to lead to a slippery slope, and no matter where it's implemented. So let's talk about Canada first. Freedom of speech is limited there. So according to the University of Alberta, in their paper, Freedom of Expression, they state, while freedom of expression is a fundamental freedom, it is not absolute, but it is subject to such reasonable limits, unquote, as are, quote, demonstrably justable in a free and democratic society. Now, they have implemented some hate speech laws there. As you can tell, it's not against their, what they call their constitution. So, for instance, an individual can be jailed or they can be fined for using a wrong pronoun when addressing someone. Now, this is something that has led to the rise in fame of Dr. Jordan Peterson, who's a professor at the University of Toronto. If you haven't seen any of his stuff or listened to him speak, I would highly recommend it. He's a very intellectual person and gets his point across very well. But basically, they just recently have made it illegal to, if someone is transgender and they want to be called him or her or whatever pronoun they want to be called, if you address them incorrectly, that you can be fined or jailed. Now, I personally, when I'm talking to someone, if they're transgender, I would address them by whatever pronoun it is they want to address them. It's common courtesy. But My own and Dr. Jordan Peterson's problem is that being forced to speak like that is a slippery slope, as I mentioned before. So, for instance, we see that in the fact that Canada has what they call human rights tribunals. So this is basically an administrative tribunal in Ontario, Canada, that hears and determines applications brought under Ontario Human Rights Code. For instance, there was a Canadian comedian who was fined $42,000 for telling a joke. So Mike Ward told a joke about a disabled kid. And it's not a joke I personally would tell myself, but he was brought in front of the Human Rights Tribunal and was fined $42,000 for telling a joke. It's a slippery slope. We see it in England as well. Now, according to Politicalite, there was a man that was arrested for calling migrant groomers animals. He's facing 7 years in prison for this. So if you don't know, groomers are basically people who quote unquote groom young kids, get them ready for being taken advantage of sexually. Now, at the same time that this gentleman was arrested, there was a local grandmother who was arrested alongside of him at the same time for, quote, doing nothing more than filming his speeches. The police showed up to her door and she said, the police came to my door and said, Catherine, we're arresting you for distributing racial hatred. This is one example of people being jailed for what they call racial hatred, when in reality, it's telling the truth. Someone who is grooming a child, whether they are a migrant or whether they're not a migrant, is an animal. And the fact that they're a migrant and someone said that led them to being put in jail. Now, another example is Tommy Robinson. There was a rape case going on with a Muslim migrant in the country who came there and was in trial for raping a minor. Now, Tommy Robinson reported that the migrant was a Muslim in one of his, it was either an article or one of his videos. And he was jailed for what they call inciting racial hatred. So just stating the fact that the defendant was a Muslim got Tommy Robinson put in jail for, quote unquote, inciting racial hatred. There's another example in the UK where a gentleman named Mark Meachin, who is a YouTube personality, was fined because what he did is he taught his girlfriend's dog to do a Nazi salute. Again, not a joke I would do, but the way he describes it is he hated his girlfriend's dog. It was a pug. And he thought one way to really tick her off was to teach it to do the Nazi salute. Now, he was fined for that. I believe it was upwards of 900 euros. And showing where it gets into a slippery slope, according to the BBC, they've actually implemented a ban on gender stereotypes in advertisements. So, the article goes on and says, for example, if you had a woman doing the cleaning, we wouldn't anticipate a problem. But if you had an advertisement with a man creating lots of messes and putting his feet up while a woman cleaned up, and it is very clear that she was the only person that did that at home, that's the kind of thing that would have that would create a problem. Now, I don't know about you guys. Myself, I'm very lucky for my wife because she is the only one in my home that does the cleaning. And I'm sure that's true with a lot of households. Us men, just we typically tend to be a little bit lazy around the household. But if that's something that you put in an advertisement, that's something that you can get in trouble for. Another example is if you show a man having a hard time or not being able to change a baby's diaper. That would be something that could get you in trouble as well. So once they start implementing these quote unquote hate speech laws, it gets into not only making people feel better, but it gets into telling businesses how they're allowed to advertise. And it gets into people's speech or people's thoughts. You can't have a democracy if you can't talk and you can't express, like Tommy Robinson did, you can't express a fact without it being called a hate speech. This is something that a lot of people are trying to implement here in the United States. And I, for one, am thankful that we have the First Amendment to be able to protect us from people doing that. And it's not lost on me that there is a little bit of a flip that has happened recently in the past, probably in the 90s and the 2000s, early 2000s. There were Republicans that were talking about censoring television because it was not good for children's ears or something. And it seems to have flipped a little bit where the left and the leftists are the ones that are wanting to ban the free speech or ban the hate speech and censor speech. Now, no matter who it is that wants to censor speech, whether it's Republicans or Democrats, I'm against it. I think every red-blooded American in this country should be against it. And it's something that is going to keep us free and allow us to be able to remain the greatest country in this world. Thank you guys so much for listening to this podcast. That will just about do it. Stay tuned. Tuesday, we should be coming out with another great podcast. I hope you guys have a great day and God bless.